I say it often that we don't want to be a mile wide and an inch deep and get really average at a lot of different things. We want to be really good at a few things and then find ways to kind of branch out from there.
On today's clinic series, we have a presentation segment given by McMurray University head coach Jordan Neal at the D3 Top 25 Clinic. We explore the intricacies of developing an offensive game plan. Coach Neal draws from his coaching experiences at Hendricks College and McMurray University. He stresses the importance of prioritizing the run game, understanding team strengths and weaknesses, and adapting to opponents' defensive strategies. Emphasis is placed on coaching what you know, adapting during games, and optimizing play calling for first downs and third down efficiency. This clinic segment provides a checklist of things to think about, while Coach Neal also drops some important details on how to put together a game plan and approach play calling on game day. Stay tuned for our Winning Edge takeaways and ideas for implementation following the episode. What you see on tape is a direct reflection of what you teach and how you teach. Video is important, but if you don't teach well, you're not going to like what you see on your video. First Down Playbook has been helping coaches teach better for 13 years. It allows you to present installs, playbooks, and practice cards in half the time with NFL quality. Coaching tools like video pairing, a player app, practice schedules, and wristband sheets have made First Down Playbook a program management system with everything in one place. If you're in a position of leadership with your football program, receive a free one-week look at First Down Playbook. Call them at 512-814-6158 or visit them on their website or social media. Mention Coach and Coordinator Podcast or use the coupon code COACH24 to receive a $100 discount off the normal $700 First Down Playbook team membership price. Links and the phone number are in the show notes.
The cords.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, guys, we got another great one here. I met Jordan years ago when he was, I believe, at Hendricks at the time, and they had a ridiculous amount of offense. I think they averaged like 600 yards per game. He's always done an incredible job on offense. He's head coach now at McMurray University and doing a great job there. And we're excited to have him here at the D3 Top 25 Clinic. And that's Jordan Neal.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm going to jump right into it. I've got a pretty densely packed presentation here with a focus on building an offensive game plan. So the first thing I'll say before I get going is that I'm a Division III product. I played at Hardin-Simmons University here in Abilene, Texas. And so getting an opportunity to come back to my hometown where my wife is also from here at McMurray has been a tremendous blessing for me and my family, and took over a program here in 2019 that was in pretty raw shape and was kind of downtrodden, and got this opportunity on the heels of spending 7 seasons at Hendricks College up in Conway, Arkansas, Division III program that we started football from scratch in 2012. And so I'm a product of great coaches. I'm a product of being around some really, really good programs. And certainly I've got a penchant and a love for Division III football. And so I'm just going to talk a little bit about how we game plan and just get right into the weeds of it. So here we go. All right. So first things first, just general points, just things that we're looking to try to do. Priority number one is always to find a way to be able to run the football. Nothing novel about that concept, but we want to be guided by the principle of how can we find a way to create run game first and foremost. Okay. There's a lot of offenses to choose from, and a lot of offenses have come and gone. And I do believe that football has a cyclical nature where fads just kind of come and go. And, you know, you see things kind of work around as you, especially as you watch really high quality defensive coaches adapt and improvise to, you know, recently over the last 15, call it 20 years of prominence of the spread offense. So there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat, but yeah, I think primarily you have to have an objective to find a way to run the football, and that's never going to change. Okay, so you got to have a philosophy, something that you believe in, and something that you can really, really hang your hat on. I say it often that we don't want to be a mile wide and an inch deep and get really average at a lot of different things. We want to be really good at a few things and then find ways to kind of branch out from there. Okay, so coaching what you know, and especially coaching what you can teach. I think teaching is the operative skill in being a quality coach. And so there's nothing that bothers me more than not having the answers for problems or feeling like your players can't look to you and know that you know exactly what's going on and that you've done your homework and that you can adequately equip those guys to go out there and have the solutions on the field in real time. So another big part of that is just knowing your personnel, coaching to your strengths, knowing especially primarily what your quarterback can do, knowing what he can't do, and knowing what your offensive line can do, playing to your skill set. And I will specifically point out that whenever I was at Hendricks and whenever I was at McMurray coming in, you know, we weren't very good on the offensive line. You know, at Hendricks, we had 5 freshman offensive linemen, and we knew that it would not behoove us to try to build things around those guys, at least that we weren't going to be able to hang our hat on resetting the line of scrimmage and certainly not being able to protect our quarterback for long extended periods of time. So we had to find ways to be creative and get the ball out, find ways to create favorable numbers in the box so that you could block as few people as possible to try to generate run game and control the football and not turn it over by doing that with a weaker offensive line. Obviously, avoiding your weaknesses, knowing what you absolutely cannot do. If you can't throw the football, then don't try to do it. You know, you can develop those things with recruiting, with offseason, and over the course of time, but don't try to go be something that you're not and stick a square peg in a round hole. Same thing applies with the run game. You want to try to find ways to run it, but you don't want a hard rock mind and do things that you absolutely cannot do. Understanding your competition is a big key to this as well. I think it's important to have a dossier on each program that you are going to play regularly. Certainly, you're going to have your non-conference games that are going to cycle in and cycle out. You may not see those teams, but once every blue moon, but you're going to know who your conference or district competitors are year in and year out. And I think it's important to not only build a dossier on those teams, but on the head coach and understanding a little bit of a history lesson on the, you know, from the offensive perspective. You need to know what that defensive coordinator likes to do, who they've been around, what programs they've been in, and have a sense of what you're going against, you know, week in and week out. So understanding your competition is a big part of that. I like to have a really, really big menu and a small game plan. And obviously repetition is a huge key in that. So nothing novel about anything that I said right there, but those are some general points that we don't ever want to lose sight of as we think of all the millions of ways that we can generate offense. All right, so moving on. First downs. Okay, this is something that I learned early on as a play caller when I first started out at Howard Payne back in 2007. And something really that I even knew kind of whenever I was playing as a quarterback, you know, in the offense at Hardin-Simmons University where I played. On first down, if you're ever in doubt, call a base play. There's nothing wrong with being basic on first down and trying to get yourself on schedule on first down. So if you're ever in doubt, stick with what you know and do what you know you can execute on first down so that you give yourself a chance on second, third, and then potentially fourth down. Learn something new every single play throughout the course of the game. I spent one season at Howard Payne running triple option. Believe it or not, I hated it because it was new to me and it got me way out of my comfort zone. But little did I know at that time, that was something that was really helping me to be a more well-rounded and a more holistic offensive play caller. And the reason for that is we paid a lot of attention to, in the triple option, who's making the tackle. And we charted that throughout the course of the game. And I think there's a lot that you can derive by having a student coach or a GA or somebody that can just mark down, say, hey, number 42, who's the well linebacker or whatever, he's consistently making tackles. Well, why is that? And you need to kind of learn those things throughout the course of the game, because I think the really good play callers are the ones that can not just necessarily draw up a good game plan that's going to look good on paper before you play the game, but how can you adapt and evolve throughout the course of the game? And you can't do that unless you're being really conscientious about learning throughout the course of the game. Got to be great on third down. Practice third down, short, medium, and long. I'll get into more of that in just a moment, but I think you've got to simulate that in practice each and every day. All right. And then I cannot even overstate the importance of P10 study. P10 study is vital. You've got to make sure that you get all your tight ends, all your fullbacks, all of your players out on the sideline huddle in order to try to confuse the opposing personnel finders. I think a lot of defenses these days do a really good job of identifying personnel and matching what they're going to do front-wise, you know, second level, and certainly coverage-wise based on whether you're in 10, whether you're in 11, 12, 21, 22, whatever it may be. So P and 10, you've got to have a great game plan. We typically get about 12 to 15 P and 10 plays throughout the course of a game. And I'll talk more about that in just a moment. But we score on 66% of the series is when we make a first down coming off of the sideline. Okay. And beyond that, if you drill down a little bit deeper into that, we make a first down on like 90% of the individual series where we make 5 yards or more on first down. So when you think about it, You know, in a course of a game, you may run 60 plays, you may run 80 plays or anything in between, but it's the 12 to 15 plays on P&10 that really can set the stage for your ability to get the ball in the end zone or get yourself in scoring range with a field goal. Suggestions from the booth have got to be reserved between series or when requested from the sideline. I'm a head coach. I call plays and I do it from the sideline. I've gotten comfortable doing that over the years just by necessity. And certainly as a head coach, it's not like I can be up in the booth. So there's a lot of rattle and there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of competing voices that could be taking place. And we just simply can't have that in the middle of a series. You've got to talk about those things in the hot area and in between series as you have time. And you've got to really coach hard during those intervals between those series. So really all I'm looking for is somebody that can just really briefly, really quickly give me hash, yard line, down and distance, and just spit it out immediately. Left hash, first and 10, balls on the 25. Boom. That's simple. That's all I need. You know, and in some cases, you don't even need that. Okay. But it's got to be really, really tight, a tight protocol for communication in the headset. Otherwise, your brain can go in a million different directions and you can get frozen and be left without a play, having to call a timeout or getting a delay of game or calling a less than optimal play and you get yourself off schedule. And now your players are frustrated, your coaches are frustrated, and you just created a really easily avoidable situation. I think the next thing is big. Have a reason for calling a special play. This is something that takes practice. It takes time. It takes getting a feel for what works and what doesn't. But you've got to be able to set things up. I love Greg Maddux. I love Greg Maddux as a pitcher. You know, he was a guy that pounded the strike zone. He only threw a couple pitches. He threw a four-seam fastball, a two-seam fastball, a really tight curveball that changed the speed, and he threw a wicked circle change. Every single one of those pitches looked exactly the same to the hitter coming off of his hand, but it became something different, and he did a great job of setting the batter up to think that he's going to see a certain pitch, and then he backdoors with something else and keeps him off balance. That's why he got a lot of ground ball outs, a lot of pop flies, and a lot of strikeouts. So you've got to have a reason for calling something that's a little bit out of the ordinary by setting that up throughout the course of a game. Don't risk losing 6 yards for 6 points unless you just absolutely have to. Okay, I've seen that happen all too often where you get into a rhythm and you get into a flow, you get a little bit anxious and you're greedy and you dial up something, you were a little bit lax in your protection, you give up a sack or give up an easy run through or create a situation that's going to make the look foggy for the quarterback and you turn the ball over. Okay, so don't risk getting a touchdown, you know, at the expense of getting sacked or putting the ball on the ground and turning it over. Run our stuff, okay? Don't let the defense change who you are. I think that's a big, big key. Like as an offensive play caller, it's okay to be dogmatic about the fact that you know what you're doing, the defense doesn't know. Keep those guys basic, keep those guys simple by doing your stuff and not allowing those guys to dictate the terms of play. Make them beat us. Okay, don't beat yourself. Obviously, that goes without saying, but I think more games are lost by coaches than are won by coaches. So we've got to do a smart job of staying out of the players' way and not trying to do too much. All right, next. So some weekly game goals. Okay, we want to be balanced on offense. Okay, the ideal, and I am going to speak from the perspective of ideals. None of this is perfect, but you know, Keith mentioned it in the opening. You know, we were fortunate enough at Hendricks College to break the NCAA record for single season yards per game in 2016. And then we turned right around and nearly did it again in 2017. And we had 600 yards. And so, and we were pretty balanced. It wasn't 300 yards rushing, 300 yards passing, but it was pretty close. We threw the ball a little bit more, ran the ball a little bit less in terms of productivity. But by and large, we were forcing teams to beat us or to have to defend the run and the pass. So ideally, if we could run for 225 and throw for 300, that's an ideal. Okay, we want to limit our QB running as much as possible because, man, we have got to keep that guy healthy. If there's one flaw in our offense, and I think in today's offense, so often you see how quarterback-centric it is and how driven it is by that guy. And so it doesn't behoove you to put that guy in harm's way and at risk when you can get the ball out of his hands and limit the times that he is having to go and take a glancing blow or a direct hit from somebody on the other side.
As coaches, we know that some of the biggest hurdles to our team's success can come from off the field. Your team needs support to tackle the endless list of expenses, uniforms, training equipment, travel, and more. But raising that money can feel like a full-time job. Thankfully, there's Vertical Raise. Vertical Raise is the premier online fundraising platform using innovative technology to create the easiest and most efficient system available. Raise more money in less time with a local fundraising coach who works with your team every step of the way to customize the ideal fundraiser. With options for online donations, digital discount cards, premium product sales, and even spirit shops, Vertical Raise has top-of-the-line solutions for every fundraising style. To find out more, visit verticalraise.com and we'll get you connected with an exclusive offer on your first fundraiser.
Okay, 75 plays would be great for us. If we're balanced, that's 38 and 37 run to pass, or 37 to 38. And again, we can't hit that nail on the head every single time, and we don't attempt to. But if you do, hey, 38 rushing attempts is a lot of running the football. And 37 passes is a lot of throwing the football. And if you can complete, you know, 60 to 65% of those passes, talking about a lot of production there, and limiting the times where that ball is hitting the ground. All of that totaled up, if you can average 7 yards a play, you're playing at a really, really high level. Okay, taking shots. Okay, we want to take shots. We want to try to take at least 3 shots down the field by quarter, which gives us an opportunity to put it over the top 12 times. I always tell our players, and I tell recruits this all the time, so there's 4 things that can happen on any pass play. You can throw it out there and complete it for a big play or a touchdown. You can throw it out there and you can draw a penalty with a first down for 15 yards, a first down and a half for 15 yards. You can throw it out there and get it picked off, but we don't even allow for that. We just want to become the defender and not allow that ball to be turned over. And then you can throw it out there incomplete. Okay, I don't even look at those things as bad things. Out of the 4 things that can happen, 1 we take completely off the board. 2 of them are good, but really we like to think in terms of even an incomplete pass down the field in one of those calculated shots that we're taking down the field out of 12 or so per game. We feel like that loosens up the defense, forces those guys to get back in cover 2, Tampa 2. Now it lightens the box for us so we can turn around and run the football and take advantage of a lighter box. Okay, but we want to take shots. Must have an answer for 3 things: boundary blitz, field blitz, and all out. There's a million different coverages, and certainly we could get into the weeds of that. I'm not going to talk about coverages in this presentation, but I just think it's important for you to get a sense of, do they blitz? How often do they blitz? Do they like to bring it from the boundary? Do they like to bring it to the field? Do they like to bring it where they're boxing the quarterback in from the field, forcing you into the boundary? Or do they like to flush you out to the field because they've got an extra nickel player to the field and they've got an extra defender out there and they want to play it inside out and force the fourth quarterback to scramble and take a hit? So you've got to have an answer for those 3 basic things, among others. All right, moving on. Practice reps. How many practice reps do we get in a week? Well, that's easy. We want to get as many reps as possible. Okay, nothing new, nothing novel about that, but we want to really try to maximize the time that we have spent on the field for practice. On Monday, this is a college schedule. We play on Saturdays. So just the way we operate at McMurray, we don't practice on Sundays. We actually give the players off on Sundays and we practice on Monday. It's a heavy special teams day for us. So we're going to cover a lot of ground when it comes to special teams. When it comes to offense and defense, primarily from the offense perspective, we're going to get as many reps as possible in our skill players passing tree competition. I'll throw up a little diagram of what that looks like. It's one of the best things that we do in our program. The biggest key to that, as you can see right there, it says AMRAP, as many reps as possible, cover all pass concepts. And the reason why that's a big key is we may not have every out, every dig, every corner, every inside fade, every wheel, every snag route or whatever in the game plan that's going to play a prominent role in that particular week's game plan. But man, we want to get that rep on Monday while we're conditioning our guys and getting them not exhausted, but we really want to push them and not have to condition on Monday, but get the conditioning in our skill player competition stuff. And for the fact that when Saturday rolls around, if you didn't think that you were going to call that snag route or that special concept, you can pull that thing out because you know your guys know it because they've run it every Monday and they've run it at a high level and it's not going to be a surprise or a shock to them. If you realized in game in mid stride, we need to bust out that route play or that combination. O-line and tight ends, those guys are going to do perfect plays, again, as many reps as possible. And we want to cover all run concepts and all backfield combinations. Okay, so that's tight end and back same side. That's tight end and back offset, broken, pistol, you know, no tight end in the game, back in gunner, back in gun, whatever it may be. We want to hit all of our inside zones, all of our wide zones, dart, counter, power, stretch, whatever it may be. And we want to just get as many reps as we possibly can on that. So that's kind of the theme on Monday, among other things. And I'll talk more about that competition in just a moment. In fact, I'm going to move ahead to that just so you can kind of get a sense of it. Our competition day, we've really kind of made a fine art out about this. But what we do is we've got two lines of quarterbacks going at the same time. And so two sets going competing against each other. We've got receivers out on the perimeter to start out. And we're going to hit a hitch. We're going to hit a slant. We're going to hit a 5-yard out. We'll move the cones inside and move the receiver line in inside to a slot position, run a 10-yard out. We'll run corners, digs, posts, curls, goes, seams, wheels, inside fade. And that's just to name a few. And the idea is to snap the ball at the same time. We use the receiver sticks. We force them to get around the stick. Like in this I've got a hitch drawn up right here. You got to get around the hit, around the stick. And they got to catch it in front of the dummy that's sitting sideways. As soon as they catch it, they're going to burst through the finish line, through the goal line. And we're going to, you know, we're going to tally that up and we're going to have a competition throughout the course of about a 20 to 25 minute period, 4 to 5 segments. If you're looking at 5-minute segments right there, again, we'll hit every single route combination. We'll move the sticks, move the cones out there. So again, you're getting every conceivable route individually and your quarterbacks are getting a ton of reps. And those guys are conditioning and competing, and it's fun at the same time. So that's kind of a Monday look. All right. Let me go back real fast. Okay. So Tuesday, breaking this thing down. On Tuesday, we want to focus on our zone runs, and we want to do it under the auspices of first and second down or P&10, first down and second down. We don't look at much of a difference between first down and second down. The play calls and the attitude is not going to change that much between first down and second down, especially if you're on schedule on your first down plays and you're making 4 to 5 yards, then the whole playbook is kind of wide open, just like it would be if you're being aggressive on first down. So what do we want to do? We want to try to get in inside hole. We want to try to get 12 reps for the ones, 12 for the twos, and then we'll mix in the threes with the twos in that second set of 12 reps. And then we're going to focus during that time. And this is a big key to the whole picture of things. We're not going to do any 10 personnel run games in inside hole. We want to involve the tight ends. We want to be in 11 personnel, 12 personnel, 21 and 22. And I suppose if we wanted to get in 32 or 23 personnel or 30 or bone, whatever you want to do, but we're really, really focusing on our run heavy loaded backfield sets. And we want to do that versus a scout-based defensive front with movements, according to what we're going to see that week against our opponent. 7-on-7, a lot of reps that we're trying to get here. 44 7-on-7 reps. We want to go 28 open field, 16 red zone. And then within that framework, we want to get 24 reps for the ones, 20 for the twos. And again, like we talked about in inside hole, we're going to mix in the threes in that grouping with the twos. And then here we're focusing on 10, 20, and 0 personnel. Okay. So we're not going to be in 11, not going to be in 21, not going to be in 22 personnel during that time. And we're going to do that good on good versus our defense, mixing and matching as many different coverage looks as possible and let our guys compete, let our quarterbacks find open receivers and work through their progressions. Blitz period, pass screen draw period. Right here, we actually want to limit the number of reps for our ones. Okay. So 16. Total reps, we want to get 4 for the ones, 8 for the twos, and then we want to get 4 for the threes. Okay, so this is really an opportunity in a little bit more of a violent environment where you're kind of saving your ones, giving your twos a little bit more of the lion's share of the reps during that time, and give those guys 8 reps and give the third group 4 reps or whatever. Again, good on good. Let those guys compete and get after it a little bit. All right, and then when we get to team, ideally, we want to try to get 48 team reps. And again, we're not going to be even Steven right there. We're going to be 28 reps for the ones, 20 for the twos. And again, we'll mix in the threes with the twos. And we're going against a scout defensive look according to what we think we're going to see versus our opponent on that week. Then the Wednesday practice is going to be the repeat menu as Tuesday. But our focus now, instead of it being inside zone, outside zone, we really want to hit our gap schemes. And then instead of focusing on first and second down, we want to really mix in and work our third and fourth down conversion situations. But the practice itself is going to be a carbon copy in terms of time spent, reps given as Tuesday. All right. And then practice number four, which would be either a Thursday. I know it says Friday down there. For us, we've changed that to Thursday. We want to try to get 48 team reps and mix in our gaps, our zones, inside, outside, darts, counters, whatever it may be, and create a simulated look to the way a game is going to flow and try to get our guys a run through of a real game. And they're not just focusing on inside zone or just gap.
Here are winning edge takeaways and ideas for implementation. One, think about how you can maximize repetitions, because reps lead to understanding, and understanding allows your players to play with aggressiveness and confidence on game day. Coach Neal gives some great ideas of how they maximize reps every week on Monday during the season, and how that learning builds with all three teams of their offense. A focus in each period is helpful early in the week, and then mixing it up late week can give more of a game feel. Two, have a clear and concise protocol for game day communication. It's easy to get messed up as a play caller if there's unnecessary chatter or information over the headphones. Set up a clear and concise protocol for you and your staff, and practice it as often as possible to make it better and better so that game day operations and communications are clean. Three, have a detailed plan with reps and know what you want to do with them. Coach Neal knows exactly how many reps they will get each day and what they want to do with those reps. There's many ways of approaching scripting in practice, but ultimately reps are finite and you want to be as efficient and effective with your utilization of those reps as possible. This is something that I realized early on in my career and created an Excel spreadsheet for, and I'll put that link in the show notes. The course for this entire presentation will be available soon. Check back to the show notes in the near future for that link. Follow all we're doing at coachingcoordinator.com and follow me on X at Coach K Grabowski.